Now I would like to introduce our guest speaker. Marjorie Dagnall is a lifelong Christian Scientist and a journalistic practitioner since 1985. She has spoken at many Christian Science facilities and has these talks on CDs and tapes. She has served on the Ardenwood Board of Trustees for 9 years and as practitioner for Cedars Camp. She has been first reader and second reader, Sunday school superintendent, and currently as president of the executive board of the Watsonville Branch Church and as Wednesday noon reader since 1989. Prior to going into the public practice, she was a college professor at Santa Cruz, San Jose State University, and Hartnell College. She has adopted 5 children. The youngest is 8 years old. She lives in the country on a farm with donkeys, goats, turkeys, chickens, a pig, peacocks. That sounds like my home. Her talk today, the title, Why Can't We Just Kill the Lie? Ladies and gentlemen, Marjorie Dagnall.
I don't mind if you get up. I might mind if you leave, but I don't mind if you get up, because it's all right. I'm fine with it. I just want you to be comfortable. I'm very grateful to be here, and I have the deepest appreciation for nursing, as most of you know. All the CDs that I have all been done in nursing facilities, because I really see how wonderful it is, that thought that calls itself a Christian Science nurse. And Olive Glenn, I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and thank you for all your kindnesses. I'd like to tell you a little bit about what we're going to hear today. It's always kind of good to tell you ahead of time what you're going to hear, and then tell you what you're going to hear it, and then tell you again what you heard. And then we're kind of all on the same page. What we're going to talk about today is killing the lie, but we're going to talk an awful lot about the truth that kills the lie. And we're going to talk about my little boy's experience that some of you have perhaps heard, but it's an interesting story. And then we're going to talk about Elijah's story a little bit. And then we're going to talk about this wonderful experience that titles our talk today from actually a gentleman that I met, and some of you probably know the story. I tell it a lot, and some of you have heard it actually from the gentleman who experienced it. And then finally, we're going to talk a little bit about the lie and the absolute wonderful way that Jesus held the truth in thought and, in fact, made it real clear how to get rid of the lie. So I'm going to talk to you first about an experience that I had. My little boy is 8, and this happened 3 years ago, and we were going to take a trip that lasted about 3 hours, actually a little bit the same distance from my home in Aptos to here. And we were going to spend a night, and then we were going to come back. And we had a whole bunch of stuff gathered together, and one of the things that we had was a CD that came out from the Publishing Society. And it's about for children, and it's songs, not hymns, songs. And they're really rousing. You know, Elijah talked with God and angels and all kinds of things, and we heard it, and he loved it. Now, Colin had not gone, that's his name, had not gone to Sunday school prior to this time for lots of reasons. And so he didn't know anything about God particularly, other than what he and I had discussed, of course. But he didn't know about the Bible characters. He didn't know anything about Daniel. He didn't know anything about Noah. Noah built an ark. And yes, he did. And he didn't know anything about that. And so we got in the car and we put it in. And oh, we loved it. For 3 straight hours, we listened to it all the way down. We didn't stop. We listened to it. It just kept going over and over and over again. And by the end, he was just sitting up in his car seat at that time, just singing away. And then we spent the night, and then we came back 3 hours more, the same CD, never stopped, 3 hours. So about 6 hours, we were listening. So we got home. I had told my answering service that I would be back, and I had an extra half an hour that I could spend with him before this. So he said, could you come and watch me play? I said, sure. So went outside, and he got his Tonka trucks together, and he became frantic. He was creating all of these roads as fast as he could do it with all this Tonka, and I was watching him and wondering what in the world was going on. And he then started muttering something about, we just have to get rid of these monsters. These monsters just have to go. I'm going to push them out of town. I'm building these roads. They're just going to go. Now, we live in the country, just as you heard, and what we hear a lot is roosters and pigs. We don't hear television. I don't have one. He didn't go to preschool, so I don't know where he got the monster stuff, but they get it somehow. And so anyway, he was very much involved in getting rid of these monsters. And so I was watching with great interest. Where were they coming from? What was going on? And all of a sudden, he stopped. Just all of a sudden stopped. And he looked at me and he said, wait a minute. Just wait a minute. And so I said, okay. He said, if God is everywhere, this is not going on. And, you know, I want to talk to you about that. Because that sounds like a cute little kid having his first experience with metaphysics and the truth. And you could look at it that way, but I never looked at it that way at all. I knew immediately that what was going on here was not a basic dose of metaphysics, even though it appeared it to be so. But what it was truth removing the error, even in a child's play. That there was no way that truth was going to allow that child to deal with monsters and destruction. Many of you here have worked many times and often at night with that concept that Mrs. Eddy gives us, and I mean the concept beyond the words, in scientific obstetrics, that truth removes whatever is offensive. And you remember, it starts with the fact that a scientific, it's that sense that a spiritual idea has not a single element of error. And this truth removes whatever is offensive. I want you to try to hold on to that as we go through today's talk, because we're talking about the fact that truth has indeed removed what is offensive. In many of the talks that I have given, I have said something that I know is true. That many of you are working with situations that you healed 2 decades ago. But they're still there. Because for whatever reason, you have not accepted the fact that there never was an error in the beginning. So we're going to go back to the fact that what was really happening, it seems to me, with this little boy, was the truth, one of the synonyms that Mary Baker Eddy uses to define God, was presenting itself as it always does. And it presented itself as the reality which dispels the illusion of error, not by doing anything, but by being what it was, what it is eternally. Truth removed the error that was taking the form of monsters of destruction and violence, not by branding a sword and demanding the end of the illusion, but by simply being truth. You know, truth doesn't do anything to anyone or to any situation, really. Truth just is. It is an isness. And that isness removes whatever is offensive, not necessarily to you, but to truth itself. Now, in watching Colin's activity, my first thought was heartfelt gratitude that truth would not allow such activity, even in childish play. That truth, number one, had no delay or waiting. Now just think about it. We got a little kid out here with these Tonkas, going to get these monsters, whatever. And all of a sudden the truth says, wait a minute, this is not going on at all. Now, truth did not wait. Truth did not say, well, look, this is just a little kid. He doesn't really know anything. So I'm going to wait until he's older. And then I'm going to come and I'm going to remove the problem. But he's not ready for me to do it now. And number two, there was no lack of importance here. Truth did not say, well, I'll just hang around and see how this develops. You know, he's not really dealing with monsters. Wait until he runs into disturbed relationships and economic upheavals and difficulties like that. Those are the real monsters. I will come back when he understands those monsters, and I will take care of the situation then. Not in your life. Truth was being instant. Truth was present. Truth was always there. And truth removed this error in his thought by actually showing him the nothingness of it. So he said, "This is not going on." It was truth urging on mortals its resisted claims, as truth always does, as our leader says in Science and Health. And so it does so every moment, everywhere, but mostly we are unaware of its presence. And what I think enabled us to be aware that day was the fact that we sort of had our violin in tune, as our leader has said. I mean, 6 hours of this truth made Colin much more receptive. But we did not start out to learn about God. We didn't start out for a healing. We didn't start out to learn or to practice Christian Science correctly. We were just having a heck of a good time. And we saw truth anyway. We saw it in spite of the fact that he doesn't and didn't know anything about Bible heroes. Those words meant very little to him. He did not say, "Oh, well, if Elijah did, I could do it too." He didn't say, "Well, Daniel, look, I mean, I could..." Nothing. There was nothing in that experience that would enable him to see what he saw at that moment except truth. And the truth was present all the time. There was never a moment when it wasn't true. But we saw it, we felt it, and we knew it because we were ready to do it. You know, the important thing to note, it seems to me, is the truth doesn't hang around not doing anything. We tend to think truth does. The truth is going to come next week. Truth is going to come maybe this afternoon. Truth is going to come sometime when we're ready for it, when we're prayed up, when we've done the right thing, when we're worthy, when we've gone to our associations, when we become first readers, on and on, as we've said so many times before. But here was a kid who wasn't doing anything except having one heck of a good time singing these songs. But the truth of those songs had to have touched his heart and his consciousness in some way. Well, of course, because truth is his consciousness and it is his heart. And that is something that was manifested without Sunday school, without any kind of instruction. Now, it was up to me to be able to take that instruction and show him what it was and tell him what it was. But nonetheless, it wasn't something that I told him. It was something that he experienced, kind of like the nursing, that whole idea of being in to the room and seeing in with your own insightful sense of what this patient needs. Truth saw with its own insightful sense what this little boy needed and gave it to him. So it brought me to thinking about another experience that I had. A friend of mine came to Wednesday Noon, which is perpetual in our world. I mean, every Wednesday Noon, we've done this since 1989. Well, that was because we had the earthquake there and we couldn't get to church in other ways. And so we started this program and we've kept it going. But a very thoughtful visitor said one time that she was aware that in the lesson, there was a promise from Elijah that there would be rain, because there was a tremendous drought. And then it went on, and the rain didn't appear. And finally, toward the end of the section, it was brought out that the rain came. She wondered what was going on between Elijah's promise of rain and the actual appearing of rain. And when she looked it up, it was interesting the way she told it. She said, in church, she said, "So I started to look it up, and then I had to go back and back and back and back and back." And she said, "I had to read the whole thing." But what I found out was, and that's what she said, that Elijah was busy killing the false prophets, one by one by one. And it was only when the last prophet was gone that the rain came. What was he really doing? Wasn't he casting out every one of those false beliefs that had been hanging around? Oh, it's not going to rain. Oh, there's a Baal, etc., etc. We don't need to go into all that. But the point is, he was sharp enough to see that those could not just hang around, that they had to be put down. All of the doubts, all of the fears, and all of the arrogance, because these were gods that were standing up and saying, I do not accept your God. They were arrogant. They were unable to comprehend anything except their own selfhood. There was no room to deal with them. This was not a situation where they had to sit around and say, well, you know, like Truth. Truth didn't sit around and say, well, you know, Colin will, he'll get bigger and I'll come around and teach him then. He'll be ready. In this case, Elijah saw that they were not going to be ready. And he took the willful individual thought. He took the ignorance. He took the arrogance and the power and the presence of each one of these. And he actually got rid of them. Now, we know all about those prophets. They seem to take Elijah's time, thought, and experience. And indeed, there appeared to be a delay between his promise and the fulfillment. We can see that. But what about the false prophets that take our time and our experience? How often do we kill them off? Or do we just let them hang around, believing that they won't really do anything because we know they're not true, when in fact they are shaping our lives, determining our futures, defining our being, outlining our experience, and shaping our bodies? But unlike Elijah, we just generally put up with them. Sometimes we think they're funny. And we say to each other, oh, did you see that commercial? Did you see that whatever? Did you see, etc.? Sometimes we laugh them off. Sometimes we complain about them. Sometimes we ignore them. Sometimes we don't pay any attention to them. But they are still there. And we fail to realize the influence of their unknowing, mesmerizing presence. And that's what happens to us when we were healed of something 20 years ago and we're still carrying the problem around. Because we have not thoroughly killed that lie. Now, if we're not alert to see that truth has already exposed and thereby removed the offensiveness of these prophets, we will begin to accept their lies. We will begin to define ourselves by their ignorance. We will participate in their old theology, and we will live in their godless reality. And above all, we will think we need to fix them. We will think that we need to correct them, instruct them, and heal them. Prophet faults don't need to be straightened out, and they don't need to be fixed. They need to be done away with. Now, let's hold that for a minute. Some of you remember this story that I'm about to tell. It was so interesting that I did have an opportunity to meet this gentleman. His story is marvelous. And again, some of you already know it. But this is about a man in England who worked for the war ministry, a devoted Christian Scientist. He prayed every day that there be no enemies. He blessed them. He knew there was only one mind. He simply refused to believe that there could be a division in the universe of spirit. And he held to that every day, day in and day out. His apartment was in downtown London. His wife and his children had been sent to Switzerland to get out of the fray, and he was there. One day he came home from a particularly prayerful day of work in the Office of War Ministry, to find out that his apartment had been blown to smithereens. There was nothing left. Clearly, the enemy that he prayed for every single day had the upper hand. He was shocked. He said he had never had such confusion in his thought at all. But he did stumble through the smoke and through the rubble. And a clear thought came to him. He said it was the only clear thought he had, and that was to call a practitioner, which was a really stupid, as he said, idea, because everything had been blown to bits. But he said he staggered out, and he went and started walking. And after a period of walking, he saw a phone. And he picked up the phone, and it worked. And he called a practitioner, and he told her what happened. And she said, "The enemy has not done anything. There is no enemy. Sit and think. I'll pray for you." So he said he found a park bench, and he sat, and he thought. And he began to feel calmer. And then all of a sudden, he said, what he had learned in school as a child, which many of you learned, was the charge of the light brigade. Yours is not to reason why. Yours is but to do or die. That is the way that couplet goes. And school children learn that. But it came to him, yours is not to reason why. Yours is but to kill the lie. And so he determined at that moment that he would kill the lie. That there was no evidence of an enemy. That there was no house that could be destroyed. There was no division in thought. And that he could not be found guilty of hating, disliking, or having anything to do with that which called itself an enemy. Because he said he knew there was no such thing. So he got up. And he started to walk, and around the corner came a gentleman. And he said, "Wow, you really look kind of shocked and upset. What's the matter?" And he said, "Well, I just came home, and you know," he said, "my apartment was just blown up. I have nothing left." So this guy said, "Well, you know, I work with a war ministry too, and I'm being sent to so-and-so. So why don't you go live in my apartment for 2 weeks while I'm gone?" So this gentleman did. But the man who loaned him the apartment did not come back until the end of the war. And so this gentleman stayed right around the corner in this apartment, which was fully furnished, for the rest of the war. And interestingly enough, when the war was over, England did not know how to get back together, so to speak. And one of the things that they did was to try to rebuild some of the flats. And the only plans that they could find were the plans to his apartment building. And after that, they stopped doing it because obviously they realized that they didn't have the funding for anything like that. But they just wanted to get their lives back together. His wife and children came back from Switzerland. And while they were there, the farmer that they were staying with had a whole barn full of furniture that he didn't need. And that his wife loved. And so they brought all the furniture back to this new flat and went on with their experience. But yours is not to reason why. It isn't to say, why is this happening? Any more than it's to say, why did this happen to this little boy? Why did it happen to Elijah? What was going on? Truth. Truth was going on the whole time. And the minute that he was able to kill that lie that there was something going on that truth had not removed, that was offensive to truth, but truth didn't get to it because truth was just waiting around, kind of waiting for something to happen, waiting for him to get more understanding, waiting for him to be sick and tired of the waiting, waiting, waiting. But truth doesn't wait. Truth is immediate, and truth is there. The rain was there for Elijah all the time. He didn't have to do any metaphysical work to get the rain. All he had to do was understand that anything that said the rain was not present had to be disposed of. And that was so true of my friend in England. That anything untoward had happened to him or anyone else was one gigantic lie. And he knew exactly then what he was supposed to do, which was indeed to kill that lie. Now, in Pulpiteen Press, Mrs. Eddy writes, "An unjust, unmerciful, and oppressive priesthood must perish. For false prophets, in the present as in the past, stumble onward to their doom." Please note, false prophets stumble to their doom, not to yours. False prophets would invade the permanently established universe of spirit and trespass on your rights as one of its citizens. For this, they receive the penalty due to the crime, as Mrs. Eddy states on 106 of Science and Health. They receive the penalty, we don't. And that man caught that. In one of the CDs I talk about, I have an experience with a tooth that was giving me a great deal of trouble. And once that I realized that the accuser was not there and the trespasser received the punishment and I didn't, and that had been because I had seen one of the television shows in which one of the parents of one of the children who passed on in Christian Science was being interviewed. And at that particular time, the interviewer said to the father, "Do you go to the dentist?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Oh, when you hurt and you have pain, you go to the dentist. But when your son is in pain, you don't." What a vicious lie that was. And it incubated my thought. I denied it at the time. It was vicious. It was so wrong. But it hung around, and I'm sad to say that I didn't kill it. And so it came out in the form of an abscessed tooth about 6 years later. And I only know that, not that I traced down error, because I don't, but it was obvious in the way that it came out. And I understood exactly. Those words came back to me in my mind as truth was showing me what was offensive and removed it. And instantly, that abscessed tooth stopped. And I called my daughter and said, "I'm ready for a Coke and a hamburger now, just bring it along." So, what we're thinking about here then is the monstrous idea of duplicity. That there is a lie that says that there is more than one God. There is a lie that says that we are separated from God. There is a lie that says that we have our own human selfhood. And that we're in our own little orbit. And yes, we know that this is true, and we know the absolute, and we know what Mrs. Eddy said, and we know what happened in our family 2 decades ago, but this is different for us right now, and we're having all kinds of difficulties. But one of the reasons that we're having the difficulties, I think, is simply because we believe the false prophets. We actually believe them, because we don't get rid of them. They just hang around in thought as though it's okay. Like lights waiting for next Christmas to come. It is this situation where we need to be very thorough in not letting the false prophets that we see and hear on television until we're sick of them. We know what they're going to say before they're said. We know that there is one catastrophe after the other. We know that there is one disaster after the other, and we wonder who's going to get the disaster next, instead of absolutely killing the lie. I was working with somebody in Santa Barbara a couple of days ago, and Santa Barbara lost its electricity 2 times. And this gentleman is a staunch Christian Scientist, and he said, "Do you know that we went through 2 outages before I realized that the lesson was on light?" Those are the false prophets, right? We don't have any electricity.
Okay, we'll get out the candles.
We don't have any.
Okay.
Whatever. Well, you know, we're Christian Scientists and we know that there's no contagion. However, we did see this and that, so therefore we should do this, that, and the other, and on and on and on and on and on. Elijah's dealing with the false prophets, seemed to occupy him for a long, long time. And the rain was there all the time, as I said. And he could see it when he was able to get rid of the false beliefs. The lingering thought. Elijah had to realize that not one of those prophets was true, no matter what it was that they were saying. Now, I like to think of Daniel and chapter 10, and many of you know chapter 10 of Daniel, when Daniel is without health at the moment. He's by the edge of the river, and he hasn't been able to drink for a period before, but we're 3 days we're talking about. He hasn't been able to drink. He hasn't been able to eat. But he's by the river Hinnom, which, of course, the science understood and practiced, demonstrated. But the angel comes to him, and the angel says, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for those words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief priests came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia." What could be more reassuring? Here is the angel message coming to Daniel when Daniel is turning to God and is not being healed, when he's turning to God like Elijah, and what is happening is that he is still feeling badly. But the angel says to him, "But Daniel, from the first time that thou didst set thy heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard." Truth is always there. And truth presented itself after Daniel had that wonderful message that even though he had not had an instantaneous healing, and even though this problem seemed to linger, the angel thought had heard him. He had the angel thought. You have the angel thought that said you were healed 2 decades ago. But what happened was that the prince of Persia, which I believe is materialism, and the false prophets of the world were so strong and so aggressive, he had to even have Michael come and help him. He was dealing with another situation. And there's always another situation. Often we are healed of the things that we don't want to be healed of, and the thing that we want to be healed of is sort of elusive. And sometimes people say to me, "But I'm not being healed." And I'm thinking about what you said over here about the nursing report, about the character subdued, about the change in heart, the change in thought, which comes with dedicated, consecrated prayer of Christian scientists. Not just the practitioner and the so-called patient. There isn't a Christian science practitioner and a patient. There is just truth revealing itself to itself. But again, Daniel, like Elijah, had work to do before he could see what was indeed already there. Colin didn't have work to do. He didn't even know he had work to do. He was just having a good time and listening and listening. But the materialistic thought had to be disposed of in every case that I have talked about today. So the impotent man, we think about, what about the impotent man? Well, the impotent man, he stood outside in this pool, waiting, 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 and nothing happened. The fact is that I don't think he killed any false prophets. I think they were there and they defined the moment. They defined him as the victim. They defined him as the chronic case. They defined him in infinite number of ways. So much that he didn't even get the chance to get in the pool because some other guy came first. And that victimized consciousness needed to be seen through. But when Jesus came along, Jesus took care of it immediately. Why? Because the truth was there all the time. But who killed that lie? Jesus killed that lie. Because the lie of the false prophecy, somebody's going to get right in front of you when you're just about ready and the angel's ready and somebody's right there. And maybe you don't deserve it. And people are so tired of seeing you outside in this pool and on and on and on and all the kinds of things. And what, you know, what are you really thinking about? And it must be you, because if you were any better and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, I'm not sure the impotent man had those kinds of thoughts, because I'm not sure that he had divine science. But we do have divine science, and we have those kinds of thoughts. And we need to see that they are not ours. They have never been ours. And the reason that they're not ours is because truth removes properly whatever is offensive. When does it remove it? Immediately. It removes it before it happens. It doesn't remove it after. Truth doesn't sit around and say, well, let's see now. That growth is, it's got to be 2 times bigger before I'll step in. Or, oh, well, you haven't suffered enough yet. You don't really get the picture. You know, there's lessons here that you really need to learn. So I'll come back when you're really ready. Didn't come back for Colin. It didn't come back to the gentleman who lost his apartment. It didn't come back to Elijah. It was there all the time. However, we have made such a deal about removing error instead of understanding that error has already been removed. And we need to see that. And we need to go to the bottom of the thoughts that are coming to us and take them out one by one. The accuser is not there. She says that in our textbook. We have it in Revelation. We know that. Do not let mortal mind accuse you. Do not let it shape your experience. When you think about it, mortal mind is nothing more than a bunch of theories. I just see them stacked up like pancakes. The theory that you have blonde hair because your mother and your father had da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and that you have this kind of a face because you came from an ancestry back there, and da-da-da-da-da. And you are a pro. You know, you might have a little problem with an organ or with something because your family has already had it. Oh, your experience is giving you a bad time, especially at your age right now, da-da-da, because age. All of these things are theories. They're not provable. They're just theories, stacks of theories. And mortal mind presents them, usually in a white coat, looking very, very austere, being nice and friendly and saying, I'm sorry, you know. But there they are, the theories. And your kids behave such and such and such, and you behave such and such because you're in middle years, or you're in young years, or you're in elderly years, or you're in, I don't know, some kind of years, and you should be doing this, that, and the other. None of that has anything to do with God's man. They're all lies, every bit of it. The supply. Well, you know, it's retirement now, and we don't have much money. And because da-da-da-da-da. And what a lie. Are we saying God is suddenly out of supply? Or that we can't have such and such? Or you can't do this? Those are those sneaky false prophets. And they have snuck into our experience, and they really are calling the shots, and they really are defining our situation. But we need to know, really, that no matter how often we hear them, they are as nothing. The false prophets are so full of themselves, they boast that they have filled us with false information, and that we've taken it in, and that we're acting it out, because we can't stop it, we know they're not true, but they cause ill health, sleepless nights, disturbed thinking, difficult decision making. These things happen only if we forget that we've been saved from them, that they cannot operate in our experience. They have been removed. I think about that so often in the practice, and I know you do too. Jesus healed every single case of everything already. Done. Done. Why then am I sitting here trying to deal with a patient who has when Jesus said and showed us clearly that it was already healed? that it was the revelation that nothing ever needs to be fixed. Nothing needs to be changed. We only need to refuse to believe that we have been hypnotized into thinking that we have a selfhood apart from God, that we are somehow responsible for what's going on in our experiences. But like the impotent man, if we do not look at those causes and just absolutely get rid of them, they will cause things. There's no question. Because these stack of theories say they're cause. And they will act unless we're careful. They can never touch us if we understand truth's immediate removal of what is offensive. Truth was removing lie by lie by lie everything in my history. I like to tell you that I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that and I didn't do any of those things. It was very clear. Jesus said, I and my Father are one. My Father, he doeth the works. So he doeth the works. The history that I have is not a history of a mortal who went there and did this and had these adopted kids and got a PhD and did all this stuff. That's mortal mind's version of my lovely life. But my lovely life has never had one single thing in it except divine mind. And I am leading divine mind's life. And divine mind does not have any error in it, nor could it ever. Truth preserves your innocency. And you have been absolutely, in your experience, protected from all of these lies. Now what we need to do is to see that that is true. And then, more than anything else, to take the place where those lies wanted to be and absolutely suffocate them with love. Holding on to love as filling the place where they used to be. The only way, folks, that we can get rid of error, the only way we can kill the lie, is to absolutely suffocate it with love. It is love that was present the whole time. It was love that was bringing this forth in Colin's thought. It was God's love. Not necessarily God's love for his idea, although that's true, but it was God's love. And in the space where the most horrible lies appear to be, where the bombs seem to have broken down everything, where everything seems to be lost, where we don't seem to know where we are or where we're going, right there is truth, being truth, just being truth. Now, one thing more. I was just so taken, and I'm sure many of you were too. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. That's the wonderful thing, is that everybody here has their story about truth removing what is offensive. And I would love to have your story. I would love to know it. I already know my stories. I'm here talking because somebody's got to do this role. But that doesn't mean for one minute that I know any more than you know. And I know that you know scads of wonderful things about truth. And I know that you're inspired by so many things. So it's really a great deal of humility that I say this, because I already know that you know it. But last week in the lesson, which we were talking about soul and body, which was a tremendous play that the committee did, obviously, between the temple of God and the body as the temple. Wonderful. I mean, I think it was a keeper. But at any rate, the last section in Matthew, where Jesus says that it begins, actually, by Jesus going into the temple of God. And immediately when I read that, I thought of the temple of God, which is our body. Going in to that consciousness of body and casting out that which is offensive. Jesus then went on to say, my house is a house of prayer. You've turned it into a den of thieves. So I'm saying to myself, then my house, my consciousness, my body is prayer. Does that mean that I have to pray all the time to keep it going? No. Jesus was simply saying, your body has the solemnity, the holiness, the awesomeness, the right functioning, the beauty of prayer. That which burbles up inside you, which knows no error and knows only the truth of being, of absolute right functioning, of music, of a rhapsody, of a symphony, of an artistic work, everything functioning together. That's prayer. And you've turned it into a den of thieves because you have stolen from God the power, the wisdom, and the love of that body. And more than that, you have taken little pieces of it and you're selling it. You have taken the one fabric of God's creating and you have turned it into little pieces. And we have an organ here and a muscle here and a consciousness here and we have a tooth here and we have all these little parts and you are selling them when the house is one house. It is one united fabric without seam or rent. Restore to God his power, his function, his ability, his beauty, his meekness, his right functioning, not only as the body of your so-called being, but as the body of the world. When you bring that love to it, then what you have is the living, palpitating presence of the Christ. And you will recall that in the same lesson, we had those bones. And I thought, those bones are nothing more than the split apart, the separated sense. They're in that valley because they're not connected to God. They're not connected to anything. They're down there by themselves in the lowest possible place that they can be because they have no spirit within them. They have no identifying soul, as we heard beautifully read in the earlier lesson today. So you have these bones that are brittle and crisp and dried up. Why? Because they're lies. We think sometimes of the church. We see the church in eyes that are kind of brittle. We see it sort of drying up. We see churches closing. We see this. And every bit of it is a lie. Christian Science is God's movement. It is God moving. It is divine science moving. Divine science moves and takes us with it. We have nothing to fear except to refuse to break anything up or separate it from the one infinite mind that created it. So what is happening? How do we kill the lie? We kill the lie by going back in consciousness to the place that we have never left. The lie is that we have left. We have not left. Going back to the oneness of being in which there's no breaking up of parts. There's no separation. There's no things that can malfunction. There is just one, and that one is love. And you take every lie that has ever been told to you, and you bring it into the consciousness of love. And that is how, my friend, we kill the lie. Thank you.